on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Job Dean Cox again, this time he's in! At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll. Jonathan Tahoué. Capable of anything, Tahoué! Equaliser for Leighton Orient!
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're Leighton Orient from E10. Leighton Orient from E10.
Good evening. This is the Orient Hour coming to you live from Phoenix FM Brentwood Studios. On the panel this evening, we have a slightly limited number, but we're here in force in other ways. We've got Andy Gilson on the buttons. Good evening, Andy.
Good evening.
And we also have East Stand season ticket holder, Mr. Tony Smith. How you doing, Tony?
Good evening. I'm fine. It's nice and bright and sunny outside. First time the clocks have gone forward, and yes, we're looking forward. That's all we ever do as those fans. Yeah.
The first British summertime Orient Hour of 2024. Thank you for reminding us that. Well, the Orient Express is chugging along, but it seems to have stalled somewhat over the Easter period. Where it's going to end up? Well, I don't think it's going to end up at Wembley this season, unfortunately, after the weekend's results, which is a shame. I don't think any of us had any real expectations that was going to happen, but I did have a slight niggling hope in the back of my mind that you never know, we could do it. However, it is what it is. We won 58 points after 41 games, and we would have snatched off anyone's hands at the beginning of the season to be in this position, albeit it's happened in a rather rollercoaster fashion. So, we had two games over the weekend. Lincoln away on Good Friday, which didn't turn out to be a particularly good Friday in the end. And then we had Easter Monday, we had Peterborough at home. Tony, did you see any of the Lincoln match?
Yeah, I saw a Lincoln game. I mean, looking at the two games, possibly a little bit unlucky in the Lincoln game. When it came to the second game with Peterborough, I think we could honestly say we were fairly well outplayed. But as Darren Ferguson at the end of the game was saying, it's all very well dominating the match, but not taking your chances. And we could have nicked something at the end there. I mean, that's the way football goes at times. Yeah. I mean, Lincoln nicked something on the end on us. So, there we are.
Well, as I say, we're going over the Lincoln game first. I thought that our overall performance was pretty good. I'd have given us a 7 or 8 out of 10, to be honest. We didn't create that many chances, which has really been quite symptomatic of our season so far. But we certainly matched them up. That a team that came into that game who were banging form. I think they had about 16 goals in their previous three games, and there was no sign of that team on the pitch. But I think it's because, well, I think to give credit to Richie and the boys, their performance was really, really good. And to be honest, it was one of those circumstances in the end there when, unfortunately, Jordan made his error. That I was pretty gutted for the boys, actually, because I thought we deserved at least a draw, if not more, from that game. We had chances from Darren Prattley early on. O'Neill had a header over the bar. And we had one or two other sort of half chances as well. And really, Lincoln were just left to live on scraps. They had virtually nothing through the game. But that result, losing 1-0, effectively killed off our playoff hopes. And I think that we took that feeling into the game on Monday, and not wishing to do anyone down, I think that the momentum of the season has dropped off a little bit. And I think the boys have realised that the game was up as far as the playoffs were concerned. And it was quite hard to raise themselves on Monday, Tony, for the game.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to Friday for a minute, I mean, the goal was unfortunate. I mean, it was the last minute, so Jordan went to basically will it. And when you normally will it in that position, it normally hits the forward and goes off the pitch, either a goal kick or a throw-in. And unfortunately, he managed to kill it somehow and had a run-in on the keeper. But obviously, probably the worst thing for our season probably happened about 5 minutes before that when Elmiz got carried off, because we do rely on him a little bit in terms of keeping possession. It showed very much during the Peterborough game. And whilst things have died, you know, there were positives in the Peterborough game, particularly being able to play Galbraith a bit further up the pitch in what is, you know, when I saw him in the pre-season friendly, that was obviously his natural position. He's done very well at right back, but He played a great game there on Monday and topped off with a controlled volley at the far post for the goal that we scored. So that's a positive out of Monday, and you look forward to Saturday and seeing what can happen there. The one couple of little things surprised me in the selection for Monday. I thought playing Aduaji up front against a side the standard of Peterborough. I mean, you've got people like, you know, you've got someone that he's playing up against Ronnie Edwards, who's an England under-20 player. Number four, he was outstanding throughout. I thought that was a little bit hard on him. And given that I've always got the impression that Max Sander was bought when we thought we wouldn't hang on to Elmiz last season, I was quite surprised he didn't start and they didn't try and drop him into the holding midfield position. So that were a couple of little selection surprises for me, but it wasn't entirely hopeless, but the best team certainly won on Monday, but we were possibly a bit unlucky on Friday.
From what I see, it's one of those things. I'm not bitter at all. And obviously we had the circumstances with the tragic death of our supporter when the Lincoln game being replayed, but they have taken 6 points off us this season. And that, to me, when I look at that team, I really don't see them being much better. And they are banging the hunt for the playoffs. Currently, they're in the playoff positions as far as I can recall, which is quite remarkable considering when you look at the quality of their side and the fact that their lack of creativity against us. But there we are. Maybe they have that little bit of nous that maybe we need to take into next season, Tony, in order to try and steal some results.
Yeah, I mean, looking back to the Lincoln game, I mean, in a perverse sort of way, I was quite pleased. And the Lincoln keeper had a very good day against us. I was quite pleased for him because he was so sensible. The tragic night in terms of it was him who stopped the game. I seem to recall with 10 minutes to go, and it wasn't the referee. And we, yeah, I was quite pleased for him in a perverse sort of way. Although obviously, I wanted Orient to win the game. Moving on to Monday's selection, I think it'll be different for Saturday. I think they'll try someone. They'll start with someone a bit more experienced up top, but maybe we never got the ball to his feet. Which you've got, looking at the size and stature of the number 20, it's probably what you got to do.
Well, on Monday, Richie did change up the team a little bit, and I'm not one to sit on the fence, but I must say, without knocking anyone, I think the two young lads that we signed from Arsenal and Bournemouth, it hasn't worked. Richie's made it abundantly clear that he was disappointed about the fact that we didn't secure a signing of a striker, which we believe was Charlie Kelman, back in January. And I think we do need to look at the policy with regards to the signings that we make during the loan windows and otherwise. Richie's also come out and said that perhaps the timing and the way things were dealt with in the transfer window, leaving things to the last minute, wasn't the best. I don't think he was having any go at anyone particularly. It's just a frustration of the fact that what we could have done may well have enhanced our run into the season. What do you think, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, the level of expectation, I thought, for the two young lads coming in was a bit over the top, really. I mean, because one of them came from the Arsenal, everybody started thinking Kevin Campbell, and you know, something like that's going to come off for you once in a decade if you're lucky or whatever. So he can't really keep a lot of Orient fans happy in terms of who he plays up front, because I can recall us being here in January and we're saying, well, we got the whispers that the senior player we're going for was Charlie Kelman, and everyone was, no, he can't score enough goals or whatever. And I was persuading people, well, he's a Richie type player and he can do the shutting down job, and maybe with the budget we've got it might be the best idea. But it never happened, so he went off to Wigan for reasons that we're not quite sure of, but you know, cash may have come into it at some point. But yeah, I mean, we'll be on to look at who we're going to look for to play up top next season. I mean, there's no guarantee that Ruel's going to stay with us. I mean, he nearly went two seasons ago, so I'm sure him and his agent will be sniffing around. We may have to get someone new in. It's not been Pickett's season for one reason or another, and you wonder whether he is a natural up-top player. Well, the times he's actually done something is when he's been coming in and doing the number 10 role and actually playing other people in. But we've got quite a lot of people to play there. So I'm sure that the selection committee is looking around and trying to find people who are ready to come for the money that's available here. But we'll have to see who comes, won't we, really? Yeah. I'm sure someone will.
We'll look at our... perhaps we'll have some time to look at the players that we want to retain and the ones that we might want to move on at the end of the season if we have time at the end before the end of the programme, Tony. So going back to the Portsmouth game, as I say, for me, having watched that and hand on heart, we lost 2-1 and the Dan Agi chance, actually, we could have ended up nicking a draw out of the game. But I must be frank, I thought that we were largely outplayed. We had a good sort of spell right at the beginning of the game where we looked as though we were going to control things. But Peterborough soon worked out how to nullify that. And after that, I think there was only really one team in charge. It was an absolute disaster to lose El Mazzouni on Friday at Lincoln. I don't think we're going to see him again in an orange shirt this season. And actually, it's quite upsetting to think that we may not see him in an orange shirt again because, of course, he's been on loan with us for the last two seasons. What a fantastic player for the club over the last 2 years. Absolutely instrumental in our promotion last season. And this season, again, perhaps not as outstanding compared to other players as he was last season, but that's probably because the rising levels. But he's been very, very consistent. As Tony said, retaining possession for us, winning possession back, doing the dirty work across the centre of the pitch wherever he was asked to do so. And he is going to be a really big loss, isn't he, Tony?
I mean, the one good thing about him getting injured, that might seem, again, a bit perverse to say, that he's not in the shop window anymore. He'll be injured for most of the close season. And it might make him a slightly less attractive prospect for other clubs with more money who've seen him playing all season. And, you know, if you look at the opposition blogs and the broadcast you have, he's always the guy who stands out to opposing teams in terms of, you know, who would you rate at the Orient. And it'll be very sad if he won't be along next season. But Ipswich, I think, have still got him for another year, and I think they've got an option to extend, which means that they'll still probably want a fee for him. And obviously, we basically don't do fees, do we, anymore? Because all their budget,
There were some negotiations, and apparently the price quoted was way out of our league, from what I understand. Ipswich, again, there's a lot of factors here. I don't think it's necessarily a closed shop with having Elmys back at the club again. He loves playing at the club. I saw his brother and his father at one of the home games, and they said how much he loved it. And he was the one that went to Martin Ling and asked to come back in the summer to extend his loan back for another season. Ipswich may well be promoted to the Premier League, and I no disrespect to the boy, I don't imagine that he's going to figure in their plans as far as the squad's concerned if they're in the Premiership, let alone the Championship next season. So you never know. The deal could potentially be struck if they release him. Well, not effectively release him, but they don't extend his contract, don't take up the option. Let's hope, because I only think we're a better team, a better squad with him in it than out of it.
Well, Nigel Travis mentioned, I don't think it was flippantly, but the fact that we're a lot handier for Eurostar, for him to go back to Paris is a plus point for us, whereas somewhere like Ipswich, or there were teams in the Northwest who were apparently looking around to see if they could meet Ipswich's valuation. So we'll see where it goes on that one. So,
yeah, if he's happy at the club.
Eternal.
If he's happy at the club, you know, that means a lot to some players. And I think for him, I think that's more significant than others. Him effectively being a foreigner as such from France with his Tunisian roots. So we're going to hear about what Richie had to say after the Peterborough defeat, which more or less, without doubt, ended our playoff hopes this season.
Richie, thanks for joining us. I'd imagine you're disappointed with the way in which both goals were conceded.
Yeah, really poor goals. First one's obviously a mistake. But second one, organisation. The angle of approach by our man who goes for short corners was poor. And then we don't pick up when they get first and second contact. If you lose two contacts at this level, probably going to concede a goal. So two poor goals against a really good team, good outfit. But if you're going to concede goals to them, you'd rather them be of quality goals, pass through you or moments of magic rather than really, just really, really poor goals.
Because you started so brightly, creating an early chance and had a penalty appeal.
Dave, we start brightly and everything, but it's tippy-tappy. And it's great, OK, we're playing 1-2s, nice. We don't cross the ball, we don't have play. So when they counter, or when they have good pieces of play, they finish with a shot, they finish with a cross, they finish with a goalkeeper after making a save, because they've got good players. We're interested in getting 15, 20 passes in our final third. Instead of, OK, we've made someone pass it now, they're facing forward, cross the ball, put it in the box, play past people, run. We don't have a centre-forward that is demanding the ball in the box. If I was playing a centre-forward today and we've got all them good opportunities, cross the ball. And we don't have it. We don't have it. It's the biggest deficiency in our team. Our goal scoring, we've got close to the playoffs. And I probably knew this was coming. Well, I did know it was coming. We scored 1-5, 2-5, including today, and we just fell short.
Dan Ajayi, good to see him back on the pitch. And he came close in that second half.
Yeah, we had 2 free headers from the six-yard box. And Dan, like I say, he is a threat. We can only play him 10 minutes today, so I'm pleased for him that he's back. I'm just disappointed that he should have probably come back and the games are going to fizzle out. And like I said, I probably knew this end of the season was coming, and it frustrates the life out of me.
Ethan Gilbert took his goal well.
Very good performance, excellent performance. We've obviously lost Pratt through illness. Eddie's going to be out for 4 months. So when you lose your two physical players in the middle midfield, I could probably pick a second 11 today. We'll beat that starting 11. That's how mad it is.
How are we going to approach the remaining four games?
Four games?
Is it four or is it five? I'm losing.
Or five. With professionalism, with a desire to win, a desire to do things properly, because I'm always judging the players, you know. We just lack little things. How many times we get countered from the edge of the box? How many times do we get countered because we have young midfield players that just don't sense danger, that are on the forward momentum as the ball's breaking where you can't be? And they've got good players. They've learned that. They've obviously got done last year at the last hurdle in terms of being 4-0 up and getting done by Sheffield Wednesday. And you learn. They've got players that play the Championship. They've got a lot, the centre-half, so Rolls-Royce bring it out from causes the most problems. We didn't get the press right with the centre-half and he rolls out and brings it out, someone has to jump and it causes a lot of problems. But I like them, a good outfit. I watch them at the end, they come over, do you know what they've done? He walked over, he clapped the supporters, he thanked him for travelling, thanked him for the support, and he got off. Next game at Wembley. I seen two of our positions in the last 6 weeks coming, the fist pumping, everything. Burton come in and fist pump, they've lost 7 on the bounce since. And I think it's embarrassing that teams do it. Really like them. Top manager, top outfit, good players, go over, clap the supporters, my professional, next game, get off. So congratulations to them.
Home again on Saturday, and Cheltenham from a winning position lost today. They need the points.
Yeah, but I think Cheltenham away was a turning point from our season. I think at home they're very, very, very effective, but away is different dimension. The pitch there is very small, the way that they play, so they'll be fighting for their lives. And listen, we just have to stay honest, you know. There's a lot of players that are out for contract, and a lot of them at the moment are 50-50, 60-40, so I do think we need more quality in the squad. We squeezed every single ounce out of these players, you know, and I'm tired because I think I've done a good job, but you can only squeeze so much, you know. I think we're just lacking. We're obviously lacking the injuries. That's frightening. Now you put Dan Up, you put Eddie, you put Prattley, you put Jordan Graham, you put Theo. You take their best six players out of theirs, and it costs you. So I'm frustrated because I think we had a chance of a top six finish. I don't think the league's great this year, and I'm absolutely going to fall short.
Thanks, Richie.
No problem.
Thank you.
That was Richie Wellens after the Peterborough game. I think it was a fairly accurate assessment of the match itself. And I wasn't surprised to hear Richie's frustrations with regards to the injuries that we have. And to some extent, without wishing to run down the players, that we are on the beach a little bit and we're on it. We've got our flip-flops on, getting ready for the end of the season. Tony, he had a little bit of a crack at Burton Albion there, with regards to their celebration of their win when they played ugly football down at Brisbane Road a few weeks ago, and the fact that they've lost 7 on the bounce since.
I'm not surprised they've lost 7 on the bounce since, because it wasn't much of a game and we didn't play well when they took their chances at the end. I'd turn around. I was off down to Brisbane Road before that was all going on, so it doesn't wind me up at all. We've had some disappointing results at home in a funny sort of way. I don't think Monday was one of them. I think we did our best against a team that's a bit superior to us at the moment. So I don't say I walked away happy, but I walked away reasonably content.
Yeah. Do you have concerns that the season's going to fizzle out, or we've got two home games coming up, haven't we? How do you think we're going to fare in these two? Because I think they're quite important, actually, to an extent.
I mean, there's quite a few people playing for contracts there, so. I mean, people often perceive lack of effort in professional footballers, and they tend to forget that, you know, that's how they pay the mortgage and things like that. They see lack of effort when I don't think there is. I mean, our problem on Monday was lack of quality in certain areas of the pitch. They had players who were better than us in certain areas. You looked at, for instance, Kip, our ex-player up against George Moncur, and I mean, that was... wasn't embarrassing because he used to play for us, but you know, it was pretty clear who you'd rather have playing for you. And you looked at their number four, Edwards. He was playing England under 20 last summer, and we haven't got anyone who's going to get picked up for England under 20 in the near future. You know, we're hopefully building up, and we can get to that position in a season or two, but. You know, they had a near miss in the playoffs last year, and they're worried that they're going to be in the playoffs again this year because people get too wound up about the playoffs. You've only got one chance in four of getting in there, so you know, is it really something to get too sad about? I often think with the playoffs, you know, it keeps the season going, but as a general rule, you lose them. It's a cup competition when you get to that stage.
Well, our record in the playoffs isn't exactly outstanding, and we remember the Rotherham game.
Well, yeah, I think we've been in four playoffs and we've got through once. So that's statistically what you'd expect, isn't it? So it's, you know, it's just people, yeah, people dream, people believe. That's part of the reason for going to a football ground. But yeah, it's there and you go for it. But you want to get in the top two when you're in our league, not 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, for me, I'd like to see us have some momentum into the end of the season to take into the following season. I think that does count for something, but also there is a case for trying out some players and giving them some game time, perhaps towards the end of the season, to see whether they're really up to it. You refer to the matchup between George Moncur and Hector Kyprianou, Tony, and yes, I think it was. I think George really was completely outplayed on Monday, and he seems to have had his four game cameo for the season when he hit some form for us following the transfer window when allegedly he was under threat of a transfer out to Carlisle, but now we seem to have gone back to the old George Moncur that we've had to suffer for most of the season, which is disappointing in my opinion. He does have another year on his contract, what I believe, and I really does need, for me, in my opinion, need to pull his socks up. Tony, you got any thoughts on that?
I don't think there was a lot of chance of him going off to Carlisle because, as you say, he had another year on his contract, whereas Drynan was finished this April, so he was in a slightly different position. Obviously, he wanted to secure his future. But there's a player there, and I'm hoping that he can do it on a more regular basis for us. But you're right, you're never quite sure he's going to turn up a lot of the time with George, but... We'll say, in a way, he's someone who's going to play, I suspect, for the rest of the season because he's there and he's going to be there next season. And there's guys who are playing for us at the moment who, for one reason or another, probably won't be.
Yeah, maybe it might be time to give the likes of Charlie Pegram a little bit more of a run out in the team to see how he can fare at League One level. I think George Moncur probably will play quite a lot simply because of the number of injuries that we have and the fact that we are so many senior players within the squad unavailable, either illness or injury, which is unfortunate. It's one of those things. I think a lot of clubs have got a whole number of injuries. We're not just the only ones, and we can't feel too sorry for ourselves. But let's hope that we can perhaps get some form back towards the end of the season, because we don't want to sort of finish it on a low, do we?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the people we had on the pitch, I mean, We didn't have anybody, any wide players really for the Stevenage game. So that would have been an idea to stick Charlie in there, but not against Stevenage. I mean, in a way, I mean, I saw him play against Colchester in a pre-season friendly and it'd barely be the same sport, you know, in terms of what happened there. So I can understand why he didn't get a game there, but no, I think we might see his face between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, well, to be fair, the performance at Lincoln and the one at Stevenage for me were very, very similar. They were excellent. I thought we matched up the physical side of both teams as best as we could. We matched them tactically, with credit to Richie in that regard. And it was just unfortunate at Lincoln that we never came away with something. We could easily have won that game. But however, I'd rather have lost to Lincoln than Stevenage personally. I still have hopes that we might finish above Stevenage, but I think a lot's going to go down to the next two home games. We've got Cheltenham and Exeter in the next week or so. And if we can take perhaps 4 or 6 points out of those, depending on how Stevenage get on, then that might give us a leg up to finish above them by the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, the Lincoln game was a little bit different because when you play Lincoln, you can't, I mean, they are, you know, the Alex Mitchell plays from, so they are quite direct. But you can play possession a little bit more when you play Lincoln. And when you play when we got out to play Stevenage, It was Sol gets the ball, well, he's at 60 yards, and that's fight for a ball and see if one comes your way. And, you know, we won 1-0 and good luck to him. But that's probably the last performance of that nature we'll see this season. I think against Cheltenham we'll try and play out and we'll see where it goes from there.
Being a regular supporter, Tony, having seen us home and away during the season, but looking at the promotion candidates, we've got Portsmouth, Derby, Bolton, Peterborough, Barnsley, Lincoln, Oxford and Stevenage. Really, they're in the shake-up. Who do you see finishing in the top two? And who do you see perhaps progressing through the playoffs?
Top two, the two are there. I think it'll be Portsmouth and Derby. Below that, I don't think it'll change that much because I think Stevenage are falling away. And you wonder how long Lincoln can keep their run going because, as I say, you look at them as a regular fan, and you look at the other teams that are there around them, and they look to have a better team at the end of the day. Lincoln are winning, and good luck to them. But it may fall away. So I think it'll be the six who are there at the moment, to be honest. If I call
and
it.
The ultimate successor in the playoffs, my tip would be Peterborough. I have a feeling that Bolton seem to have perhaps on a little bit on the slide, but we've still got a little bit longer to go. But I take either Bolton or Peterborough will be my favourites to progress through finally to get to the final and progress and get up to Championship.
No, I agree with you there. Peterborough have got the playoff experience from last year, and obviously it all went wrong for against Sheffield Wednesday, but yeah. I think that's standing in good stead, and they would be my tip if we got to the playoff.
Well, the Orient playoff dream is pretty much over, but who would have dreamt six, seven seasons ago, with the debacle that was happening in our club, and we nearly had no club whatsoever at that time, with tax bills unpaid and winding up petitions and God knows what going on. What a circus it was upstairs at Leighton Orient all that time ago. And look where we are now, the stability that we have. We've got a fantastic manager. We've got a good playing squad. We've got continuity. We've got a new ground, hopefully coming up soon. But we have had some a new release this in the last week. The Circus Upstairs podcast has released its final episodes. I've had a chance to listen to those, and if we can comment on them after this interview. Andy spoke to Matt Simpson, one of the guys involved in the podcast, earlier today, and here's his interview now.
To rave reviews, your podcast is out there now and finished at last, and it's been a bit of a monster project, hasn't it?
It's been much more of a monster project than James and I ever imagined. When we first came up with the idea in lockdown, we thought it would maybe be three episodes, one episode per season that Bocchetti was in control of the club. But the more people we talked to, the more stories that came out, and the more we just felt we had to tell a bigger and hopefully better story. So, yeah, it ended up being 14 episodes in the end. And it's quite a long time since lockdown, so it took a while to get out, but it's out there now.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of quality in there. I mean, if you'd rushed it, I think you might have ruined it. In a way, you know, they gave you a chance to do the research and, as I say, contact pretty much everybody who was involved at the club at the time. I mean, there's an array of stars, aren't there, really? And it really got down, you know, underneath it all, and you really dug deep and found out all the secrets that most supporters wouldn't have known.
Well, that's nice of you to say. So I should say, Andy, you are also one of the stars because you appear on the podcast yourself. And actually, your insights into the Meet the Bacchetti evening were fascinating. But yeah, as you say, so many people were willing to tell their stories. And I think at the time, we obviously knew a lot of bad things were going on at the club. But until we started talking to people, particularly the people behind the scenes, we just didn't realise quite how bad it was. So as well as talking to some of the managers, some of the many managers under Bacchetti's reign, some of the players, some of the most fascinating insights were people behind the scenes. So we talked to, in this series, to the kit man, Ada Martin. We talked to Marshall Taylor, the interim CEO, who came in to clear up the mess after Bacchetti had gone. And the episode with him in is just mind-blowing, some of the stuff he found once he went into the club. So, yeah, just talking to all those different people really helped tell what really was a terrible, terrible story.
It was. I mean, if it wasn't so bad, it'd be hilarious, wouldn't it? But, you know, Marshall, I remember Marshall saying to me that it's nothing worse in business than somebody who doesn't care, you know, about that. And I think that's one of the major crimes. And in the end, he didn't care, did he? I mean, he really just, you know, unplugged the yacht and let it sink, you know. So it was a piece of work. Since you've released that podcast, I've spent the last 2 weeks checking my bed for a horse's head every evening, you know, just in case. Just in case anything happens. Not that I'm accusing. Go on.
Well, you need to be careful.
Thanks.
By the end of the time, I think, and James and I discuss this a lot, and we do, I mean, obviously it's a bad story for Orient fans, but we try and see the lighter side of it at times as well. And yeah, one of the things that we did discover in that episode with Marshall Taylor was just some of the excesses that the management team under Bacchetti were enjoying. So £7,000 a month mobile phone bills, Alessandro Angeleri, the hapless CEO, having the most pimped up BMW X5. Like, it was crazy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, people wouldn't, you know, as I say, I don't know if it's in any of the other ones. I haven't heard them all yet. I've been going through them. You know, there was the one with Angeleri wanting to play the Notts County match over on the Scores Centre because it was called off, wasn't it? And he wanted everybody to move over to the Scores Centre and play the match, which was crazy.
I mean, so many stories about Alessandro Angeleri that really my favourite character in the whole drama. I mean, not wanting to invest in an away kit. Why can't we play in red every week? Wanting to close down the club shop because he didn't see any value in it. Taking a holiday over Christmas because he didn't realise fixtures were happening during that time. I mean, his levels of ineptitude really were quite shocking.
Oh, he was a nice enough guy, but I mean, yeah, it's totally out of his depth. I mean, that was the problem. I mean, but he was thrust in, wasn't he, as you know, at the very last moment, because the guy who was going to be the CEO fell out with Bacchetti on the eve of the takeover. And so,
yeah, that's right. That was one of the stories Matt Porter told us.
Yeah.
I just want to warn everyone that Alessandro Angeleri is now working in the aviation sector. So just think about that before you book any flights.
Yeah, luckily I go on ships mostly. But do we know what airline? Do we know which airline, by any chance?
It doesn't matter. Like, he's in the aviation sector. His ineptitude. Well,
as long as it's not
far and wide.
Yeah, as long as it's not air traffic control, we're all right, I think.
Yeah, right.
Like, catastrophic if he was, I just think, but never mind. So out of all the stories you heard, and there were, you know, literally hundreds there over the podcast, what one is your favourite, for want of a better word?
What is my favourite? I mean, you know, there were some really, really awful stories. And in season three, we tell the story, thanks, with a bit of help from you guys, actually, the interview that Dave Victor did with Dean Cox. Like, that story is absolutely awful. It's definitely not my favourite story. But what happened to Dean Cox was so bad and so illustrative and symptomatic of how badly run the club was and how badly people were treated. So that was a particularly low incident. But I think one of my favourite incidents was the incident where Liam Kelly, I'm going to say lightly, shoved a ball boy at Plymouth in a very critical game for us, critical relegation game. And the ball boy, who was 17, I should say, took his light shove very badly. It ended up with Liam Kelly getting a 6-game ban. The only reason he got a 6-game ban, as we find out in the podcast, is because he was originally given a 3-game ban, but the Italian management team were so incensed at that, they appealed it and it got doubled. So, yeah, that was a good story around that. I love the story that Shona Duthie, one of the journalists we interviewed for the podcast, told about the COO, Vito Micheli, who was selling his own complimentary season ticket on eBay, which we quite enjoyed. She also found him at the point when none of the players and staff were getting paid anymore, happily sitting in first class on the train up to an away game. So there's, yeah, lots of nice levity around that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy with just utter contempt for everybody, wasn't he, really, in all seriousness. And, you know, it's, you know, we're fortunate to be where we are, I think, after that. It was a catastrophic period. I do remember, I don't know if you spoke to Danny, and I know he, Danny Webb, he went to have it out, if you like, with Bichetti, and Davey's dad said to me, he said, well, I sent some friends of mine, he said, in a car, and they sat opposite the premises, he said, because if he'd laid a finger on my boy, he said, you know, they were there to sort him out a little bit. So I think Dave knows some decent people, if you know what I mean. So
that's brilliant. I'm glad he did that. I mean, you were the one who told us the story about Bichetti bringing in his armed bodyguard to the Meet the Fans night. So you definitely don't want to mess with him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, Dave definitely was also, Dave Webb is somebody you don't want to mess with as well, I think, in the nicest sense of the world. He's a lovely guy, but you wouldn't want to be upsetting him, I think, because he's well-connected, shall we say. So, yeah. So, anyway, I mean, it's a great success. I can only recommend it to people if you haven't heard it, The Circus Upstairs. And how many episodes are there?
There's 14.
14, and that's it's great listening. I mean, they're varying lengths, aren't they? But I mean, it's a great thing. Have you got any inclination to jot it all down and issue as in a book format at all?
No, James and I are now going to take a very long rest after doing those 14 episodes, because it took much longer than we thought. So I hope everyone enjoys those 14 episodes, but there is nothing else coming for a very long time.
Well done on it. I mean, it really was, might have been a labour of love, and it's took a bit longer than you thought, but I can honestly say a great job from the pair of you, and very professionally put together. Great humour being used as well, but it tells, it tells the story of a dark period at the club, but it tells it with, you know, black humour maybe, but humour nonetheless, and people who might not even support Leighton Orient will enjoy listening to it, I'm sure, because it's just highlights the craziness of it all. And thanks once again, Matt.
That's all right. It's a pleasure. And thank you for your kind words. What I would say as a final point is, although loads and loads of really, really bad things happened, what was really, really encouraging and really wonderful to see was just the fans coming together to try and resist and fight against and save the club. And there are so many stories around that. And we talked to some of the people who gave up loads of their own time to try and save the club. So out of something really bad came something really good, and just proved to us what a special club Orient is and why we love it so much.
Thank you, Andy, for taking the time out to interview. And thank you to Matt Simpson for speaking to us earlier today. I have had a chance to listen to the remaining episodes on a long drive that I had last week down to my sister's in the West Country, and a whole mixture of emotions, laughter. I was crying at points, thinking about how bad it got at some points. And also, I was literally rolling around on the floor, literally screaming with laughter at points. It was so funny in places. And so I thoroughly recommend you, everyone out there listening, to listen to the to that podcast. Go back to the beginning. Invest the time. It is certainly worth it. There's loads of information, bits and pieces that come out in the series that I didn't know. Going right up to the very end when Marshall Taylor came in and tried to redeem things, when the Bocchetti era, the Italians had left the building, and what he had to encounter. And I was absolutely still amazed about how bad it got with the phone bills and the vehicles, etc., etc. So please do listen. Again, it's a reminder of how bad things can get. And how grateful we are that what we have now and the stability that we have at the club. Tony, we can only look forward to a rosy future under the current stewardship of Nigel Travis, the board, and filtering down through the coaching staff and players.
Yeah, I absolutely. Just listening to him now, I mean, the thing that it did remind me of that came back in my mind, when the Orient were absolutely at their lowest ebb, and I'm with my, you know, non-Orient supporting mates down the pub, and they were saying, well, yeah, does it really matter? And I sat there and I thought, well, in the reasonably, you know, Harry Kane's been a loanee at the club in the reasonably, people like Andros Townsend. And if all their worth was just to, you know, give certain young players from the area a chance, that was at least something that we could latch on to at that time. And to do that, we didn't even have to get back to League One, but we have got back to League One. And that's why we should look forward, and we should be very pleased as to how things have gone.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately we've had the two defeats over the Easter weekend, but we've got a couple of home games coming up, and we can now hear from Dave Victor with Victor's view on the last two games and looking forward to the rest of the season.
Easter saw two narrow defeats against two strong sides, both now likely to finish in the playoff places. The O's performances in each game demonstrate just how close, yet just how far, Richie Welland's side are from a top six finish. The issue, of course, easy to identify, difficult to solve. It's that lack of cutting edge in front of goal. Lincoln have scored 15 more than the O's. Peterborough, the best attacking record in League One. They've hit 77, and that's an astonishing 32 more than Leighton Orient. They've only found the back of net twice in the last six games. Both goals of genuine quality. Ethan Galbraith's strike on Monday special. But it's the lack of goals coupled with defensive lapses that have ended lingering hopes of maintaining a push for the playoffs. It's important now that the O's don't allow what is a positive season to have a disappointing end. A top 10 finish is the least that the O's deserve, but Northampton are now just 2 points behind, although the O's have a game in hand. It's been far too long since we've heard status quo at Brisbane Road. On the face of it, Saturday's visit to struggling Cheltenham provides an opportunity to return to winning ways, but the outcome must not be taken for granted. I have to admit, I thought Darrell Clarke faced an impossible task when he took charge of a side who had yet to score in their opening 9 league games and failed to find the back of the net in Clarke's first game in charge, a 2-0 defeat against Lincoln City. But the former Bristol Rovers and Port Vale boss demonstrated belief in the squad that he inherited, including the strikers. The Robins are now just 2 points behind Burton, and they have 2 games in hand. The Brewers currently bottom of the form table without a winning 6, a sign of the time that it's the O's just above Albion. But it was good to see Dan Ajai back in the squad in E10 on Bank Holiday Monday. He has been missed. This has been a campaign dominated by injury, the latest Idris El Mazzouni, who's been my player of the season, one of the best in his position in the division. I hope that Friday wasn't the last time that we saw the Ipswich loanee play for the O's. If it was, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Idris for everything he achieved at Brisbane Road. I hope he makes a speedy recovery. I wish him every success in the future and hope it's in E10 with the O's.
Thank you to Dave Victor for your weekly view. And I can only echo his sentiments with regards to Idris's services to the club and wishing him all the best for the future, whether it's with us or outside. So we've got, Tony, we've got 58 points from 41 games to date, and we've got five games to go till the end of the season. We've got Cheltenham at home, Exeter at home, Derby away, Fleetwood at home, followed by the last game of the season away at Shrewsbury. Any targets in mind for the rest of the season?
It's the oldest footballing cliche, but it does sound like a one game at a time type thing. Because you've got Cheltenham coming on Saturday, who are fighting for their lives down the foot there. Then you've got Exeter, who are mid-table. And then you're going up to Derby, who are obviously trying to get in the top two, but otherwise will be in the playoffs. So, I mean, I sat here and said forecast, I think, 15th at the start of the season. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm in the plus already. And I hope we win a couple of games, more than a couple. Obviously, everybody's talking about Elmiz, and I don't think we've got a point without him in two seasons, which is a bit sad. But there's a chance for other players to step up. And indeed, Galbraith did step up on Saturday. So let's look forward. And I thought it was a bit quiet at times on Saturday. Basically, I suppose, because we've been outplayed a bit. But I think the crowd could have done a bit more in terms of vocal support. They got into it a bit last 20, but come on, boys. Let's be having you, as a certain Norwich person once said.
Well, I suppose it's a little bit of the case. I think that both the players and the Orient fans realised that the game was up as far as the playoffs are concerned, and sometimes it's hard to get yourself back up for the next game. For me, I'm going to be optimistic here. I'm going to predict that we're going to take 3 points at home to Cheltenham, perhaps a draw with Exeter. We'll be defeated at Derby, I expect, although I am going up and really looking forward to the game. I haven't been there before. And then we've got Fleetwood at home, who I expect us to beat, and then maybe a draw away at Shrewsbury, which will give us 8 points for the remaining games and a lovely 66 point total come the end of the season, which is would be outstanding, wouldn't it, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, I drove past the grounds, Derby's ground, last Monday, and it was a little bit, we playing there, really. It's quite an impressive thing to see from the main road there. But yeah, 8 points sounds a sensible target and something that's achievable. Maybe not in the order that you gave. I think next Tuesday's game will be easier than next Saturday's, because Exeter are mid-table and Cheltenham are fighting for their lives, sort of thing. So maybe we can get the 4 points that way round. And Fleetwood may be out of relegation, that may be down by the time we play them, but we'll see what goes on there.
You never know with the Orient what you're going to get, particularly at the end of the season. These mid-table games can be quite unpredictable. So we'll go to Roper's Rant. We'll have that during the show this week. Off we go. Please, let's hear from you, Matt, please.
So, that's it. We can finally end all talk of the playoffs after an Easter that gleaned less points than a pencil. Yep, an old-fashioned Orient Easter-style collapse, where we went into Good Friday with an air of excitement and came out the other end so deflated we might as well have been playing with a punctured football. It's still a good season though, I'll keep saying that. Unless we lose the last five and bow out with an absolute shocker, then our first 9 months back in the third tier have been a job reasonably well done. What it's all about now is learning and improving. It's about ensuring that we take the good bits from 23-24, improve on them yet further, and put right anything that we haven't done so well. Monday's game against Peterborough was a classic case in that point. We were beaten by the better side. No qualms, no arguments. The Posh were the better team. They soaked up 15 to 20 minutes of decent pressure from us, and then stretched their legs at the other end of the pitch, causing us problems in our defensive third that we just couldn't quite live with. The second half we gave it a bit of a go, but it was always likely going to be one of those games where we were going to fall a little bit short, and this is why the next step for us is to aspire to be a Peterborough United. They are a well-established Division 1 side, clever in their model with regards to transfers in and out, a decent enough ground that holds just over 15,000, and they've flirted with and or spent the odd season in the second tier. In fact, had you asked me for a surefire bet at the start of the season, then I'd have been lumping on, albeit at reasonably short odds, Peterborough for a top six finish. So the question is, how near are we to being a Peterborough? Well, the ground is obviously way off, but there are, of course, plans in the pipeline. Our academy operation continues to flourish, and we do have a pretty watertight setup in the offices. It does, of course, come down big time to what we do on the green stuff. Are we a million miles away? No, but there is work to do. I would say we're about 65% of the way there. We have shown this season that we can live with the best this division has to offer. Let's face it, look down the results. How many teams have gone to Fratton Park and wiped the floor with the home side? But on the flip side of that, how many teams have played Burton at home, looked jaded, poor and lacking in complete ideas of how to grab a vital 3 points? There can be no doubt that injuries have played a part this season. Richie Wellens alluded to this in his post-match interview on Monday, talking about missing first-team regulars. Hap, El Mazzuni, Graham and Aggie, or Dan Aggie, are likely five names that are first on the team sheet. So there can be no hiding away from the fact that we're missing 45% of our best 11. But injuries are part and parcel of football, and it can only then be a factor and not an excuse. Did we get our recruitment right this season? Again, it's a yes and no. You cannot tell me that Graham and O'Neill are two unbelievably exciting attacking talents that we have captured. Yet you could argue that Piggott and the two youngsters from Arsenal and Bournemouth have added little up top in an area that has been the most injury hit. Some of the more pessimistic O's fans are pointing to the fact that this is an average League One and that this season could be a missed opportunity. Yeah, okay, fair point. But have we hit the top six this year and lost, then the expectation level next season goes off the scale. Had by some miracle we got promoted, was this a step too far too quick? You could easily argue no, but the football history books are stuffed full of abject failure following very successful periods, and that the failure I talk of actually drags you back beyond where you started in the first place. Last week I spoke about going out on a low. Momentum for next season will be key when talking about season ticket sales and the like. And of course, when Martin Ling is entering negotiations for new talent that believe the O's are heading in the right direction. New players in are all good and well, but they need to be upgrades on our current personnel so that we can turn this year's approximately 10th place finish into a top six one in 24-25. For my money, if this were a score report and an old score one and not one of these newfangled ones with numbers, then the O's would be getting a solid B+. The right recruitment, better luck with injuries, and a continually buoyant crowd and board all pulling in the same direction could easily turn that into an A or even an A+, and a gloriously memorable year in the second of the three-year plan. Finally, thanks to all those that bought a copy of the fanzine on Monday. We've still got quite a few copies left and we'll be on sale again this Saturday. So please come and find me outside the club shop on Lady Hill Road and spend an all-important quid. Up the mighty O's!
Thank you to Matt Roper for your rant. So, Matt has compared us to the posh there with regards to where we want to aim to be. Perhaps a yo-yo club between Championship and League One will probably be a fair description. I don't think that's doing Peterborough down too much. And he thinks that we're around about 65% of the way there compared to where we were a few years ago. I think we probably would have taken that, wouldn't we, Tony?
That's a very precise figure, isn't it, 65? I'm sure Matt will explain to me where that's come from. But, yeah, I mean, we're not there yet, but we've had a good run in the new year, and it's made us think of where we could be. And still, you know, 2 years on from where we were, it's still wonderful, isn't it? We've got a team that tries to play most of the time now. We only enter into head tennis when it's Stevenage, really. We get it down and try and play. Last 15, 20 minutes, we got a little bit desperate but on Monday, but that's the way it goes sometimes.
Matt's given us a B+ so far for the season. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, B. I'd leave the plus out, I think. Maybe a B.
It could turn into a B+, perhaps, if we have a nice little run in towards the end of the season and get a bit closer to six.
Yeah. I agree.
We'll see. Maybe the players can take some incentive. They listen to this show and we were going to encourage them to do as best as they can. Also, I think there's an incentive for them to finish in the top eight. I think there's some sort of bonus, and that's still attainable for them. So maybe that'll incentivise them to play well towards the end of the season. Talking about the squad, setting aside their contracts and who's due to be released in this, and who's still in contract, etc., looking at the playing staff in the pale light of day, we've got three goalkeepers, Tony. Sol Brin, Sam Howes, and Rhys Byrne. Well, Sol's on loan. Would you retain Sol, see whether we could sign him on a permanent or another loan for the season? Or would you think, on the basis that we're trying to upgrade, we're trying to improve for next year, would you perhaps be going out and looking for another senior keeper?
It's difficult. Obviously, you're looking at a mistake on Saturday, but you've got to look past that. I think he's had a pretty good season. I don't think they'll sign him permanently, but I think another year we could do a lot worse.
I agree. I think that he's made the odd mistake, but I think he has improved in some departments through the season, probably from playing at this level and playing consistently. I'm a little bit sitting on the fence there. I think that maybe we could perhaps improve. I think that, again, but he's again being compared to the late to the great Lawrence Figueroa, and what we had.
Not hopefully not late.
He's not dead yet. No, he's not dead. But you know what I mean, is the fact that he's wasted a season at Burnley, unfortunately, without playing. And why if we had Lawrence back? And I'm still going to hope that maybe that might happen in the future. But who knows? Turning to defenders, so we've got in the squad Dan Happy, Cooper, Simpson, Hunt, James, Sweeney, Beckles, Thompson and Sodgy. Now, Thompson, we probably know that he's not going to be with us next season. What about the others, Tony? Who are you thinking would you want to retain or would release? The controversial ones. What about Omar Beckles? Where do you sit?
I am a Beckles fan. I think people have forgotten that last season he was in the PFA team, he was in the EFL team. People often want to see footballers busting a gut and rushing around. It's sometimes not the way to win a game of football. And I thought he was magnificent at the Stevenage game because they played into his hands a little bit. There's times where he could be a little bit more careful with his distribution, but I'm basically a fan.
I would be looking to upgrade. I think that perhaps we could improve in the centre-back area in the squad over the close season and improve in that area, because I think that ultimately the goals that we concede are going to be huge next season.
But we don't let many goals in. Our problem's at the other end, isn't it, most of the time? I think 44 we've let in all season. That's pretty good going. I suspect it matches the top two, but... Yeah, I thought particularly Jane Sweeney did himself a hell of a lot of good on Monday. I thought he was a standout. There's times I've worried about his play, but I thought he did exceptionally well on Monday, and well done to him.
He's a great lad that we're very proud to have come through the academy. For me, again, he's not proven himself at this level, but we'll wait and see as to how he progresses, maybe, if he's kept on for next season.
Yeah, there's obviously a couple of names there, people like Thompson, who aren't coming back, but, you know, won't change that much.
What about the fullbacks? Again, this is much discussion with regards to who we're going to retain. Hunt or James, retain or leave?
I think both of them will stay. I think there's a certain element with fullbacks that people are looking for someone who kicks the ball a long way and runs around a lot. And Richie Wellens likes footballers in all areas of the pitch, so I don't think he'll change it.
Okay, well, we're out of time. Maybe we can get to the midfielders and attackers next time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Wishing you a good rest of the week and up the O's. We're not sitting, we're not in town. We're the only one of us around. And you know where we can be found when Saturday comes again. We'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're laying Aria from 10. We're laying Aria from 10. This is our club, we are proud. So sing it up and sing aloud. We were formed in 1881. The Claps and Orient had so begun. The old story on it runs. We're Leighton Orient from E10. Whatever challenges come our way.
Saturday comes again.